Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I am your hostess, Natalie Ross, and if you're new to the show, welcome. If you are a multiple episode listener at this point, welcome back. Today's guest is a local witch, herbalist, and entrepreneur, local to me where I live in Durham, North Carolina. Her name is Rochelle Eisenberger of Empress Herbs, and her little herb shop is online, and it's also in the store Everyday Magic, which is in downtown Durham. So all you witches in North Carolina who haven't checked out Everyday Magic, whenever you're near Chapel Hill, Raleigh, or Durham, head on over there, except on Mondays. They're closed on Mondays, but head on over there any other day and check them out. Say hi to those lovely ladies. Enjoy the vibes of the store. Talk to Rochelle, talk to Vicara, talk to Madison. I want to say thank you to our latest Patreon supporters. Thank you, Emily Jackson, and thank you, Jen Fenoff. I never know how to say people's names, so excuse me. And thank you, Lauren Smith, for your double love. So if you want to share some love with us, you can share some love by posting a review on iTunes, by sharing episodes with your friends, by going to patreon.com/dreamfreedombeauty and contributing $1 or $2 or $1,000 per month, whatever floats your boat. And I'm super grateful for all of that. And let's keep the party rolling. And I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Rochelle. And I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, yeah. And for listeners, Rochelle, it's not often that I get to interview someone who is local to me, and Rochelle has an herb stand in Everyday Magic, which is a witchy magic store in Durham, North Carolina. So it's super exciting to have a fellow local witch. We keep it local here today. Local magic. And so it's pretty exciting to bring some hometown love to this. So, Rochelle, would you like to lead us on an invocation to get centered and present?
Oh, I would.
Okay, go for it.
All right, let's all just take a deep breath. I call upon our spirit guides and ancestors to guide our conversation today with grace and wisdom that it may be of benefit to all beings. And so it is.
I like it, short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
And I always love having guests do this so that listeners can get a sense of how many different types and ways of centering practices there are that work.
Yes.
You can do short, long, whatever. It doesn't matter. Cool. So there's so much I want to talk to you about. And just for our listeners to get a little bit of background, Rochelle is an herbalist, and she's a mom, and she's a magic witchy lady, and she's an entrepreneur. And so we're probably going to weave through all of these different aspects of your life today, Rochelle. And so I want to start out by getting a little picture of where you're at now. What are you doing now with your herbs and with your little herb spot at Everyday Magic? Can you tell us, do you want to tell us the story of how you ended up at Everyday Magic?
Well, the shortest version is I had been a teacher of small children and a director of a local private nonprofit for 22 years. And I got really tired of sort of reinventing the nonprofit wheel, and hiring and firing people is not my favorite thing at all. And I left that, and then I went to work in a small retail shop in Hillsborough, where I actually live. And I started working, I was actually working with animals, and I started doing herbs with animals there. And it kind of brought to the surface all this stuff that I learned about herbalism, and I wanted to go deeper, and I started studying that more, and I started studying homeopathy. But I couldn't find a job incorporating either of those two things. Like, I shopped at Whole Foods for years, and my local Weaver Street Co-op, and I kept applying for jobs and nobody would hire me. And I could not understand this because I was so qualified. I thought maybe my age had something to do with it. You know, I'm not really that malleable anymore as far as my attitude. I'm like, I'm pretty straightforward now. I know what I want and I know how to get it. So I started making powdered incense blends and spray mists for rituals. I really love incense, but most incenses give me a painful headache. And then I learned how to just make my own using herbs, and I loved it. And my friends loved it, and they were like, you need to sell this stuff. And I was like, yeah, right. Because I also, the other thing people don't know about me is I am a maker of all things. I'm a metalsmith. I dye yarn. I weave. I knit. I spin. I can do pretty much anything. So here's just one more thing. People are like, sell it. And then I'm like, nobody wants to buy my stuff. So when After Everyday Magic opened, I, along with probably, I don't know how many other people, sent Bakara an email reaching out to her and telling her about my products. And I brought her a whole box of pretty much everything I do. And the one thing that I do that other people don't is I make spagyrics, which are an alchemical, sort of an alchemical tincture that takes a really long time and it's super powerful. So I brought her all of that and I showed it to her, and she was completely taken with the incense and the sprays, the spray mist, ritual mist, and my spagyrics. And she started buying them, and I kept refilling my stock, and I'd come in and we chat a little bit. And I said, you know, I have like, you know, 75 herbs in my house. You know, if anybody needs any, I can just, if you know of anybody, they can just let me know. And she's like, okay, why don't you take over that back wall and build some beautiful shelves, and you can just be there and you can just consult with people and give them what they need. And literally within 2 weeks, that is what happened. I mean, I sold my spinning wheel and found the most beautiful handmade maple bar on Craigslist for the exact amount of my spinning wheel. And, you know, my partner and my son helped build the shelves, and with wood that was left over from a garage building project that we had, and it was just there, just like that. And that was the most beautiful sign that that's where I'm supposed to be. And people just keep coming in, and they love it, and I love talking to them and getting to know people, you know, and what they want. And I make them custom things. I make them custom tea blends or custom tinctures, and yeah, and even, you know, custom incense blends, if that's really what they want. I'll do it all.
Ooh, I love it. And but so yeah, something that people might not be familiar with, I know some of our listeners are, but mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is not everyone is spagyrics. Right. And so yeah, can you tell us about your spagyrics, girl?
I will. So they're really amazing. I took a vitalistic healing class from my homeopathy teacher, and she is absolutely incredible. She's out in California. So spagyric is you're making a tincture, but in addition to that, you strain the plant material out of the tincture, out of the menstruum, out of the alcohol, and then you actually reduce that back down to its mineral ashes. So I light the plant material on fire, and then I actually bake it at 1400 degrees for many hours, and then recombine that with the alcohol and have that over a low heat for any number of days or weeks. All of this is calculated by the plant you're using, your intention, where placement of the planets, time of day, auspicious times of days. I mean, so this process can take years depending on how really into it you want to get and what your intention is. And then when you're done with it, I also use organic 190 proof grape alcohol. So it's very intense, and you need, you know, literally a drop will do you, but it's so powerful and so amazing. So it kind of, for me, it combines, you know how flower essences are more for emotion, mm-hmm. and people think of tinctures as being more for physical health. To me, it's sort of a perfect fusion of the two. Mm-hmm. You've got this really high vibrating, bit of plant that works emotionally and physically in this very synergistic, beautiful way.
Cool. And have you ever fantasized or actually done this of making the alcohol out of the plant material too? Of distilling
it? I have fantasized about that. I do tend to be something of a klutz. So like explosion is very worrisome to me. Like my teacher has a setup outside behind her house in a yurt where she does it. And I think that that's a really brilliant idea. You know, like someday if I have enough space, I would love to have a setup where I do it. She used to actually distill her own alcohol and she would triple distill it. Wow. And then make her spirits. Yeah. It's amazing.
But that's, you know, safety first in these things.
Safety first. Also, I don't know. I mean, my children are grown, but I have 20-year-old boys, but you get them together and it's still like they're 8. And if they knew that there were things that could explode on our property, they would mess
with it.
Would
be exploding it. Yes.
They would be exploding things, especially if you mentioned alcohol at their age. You know?
Oh my gosh.
I just don't think it's a good idea.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That is so cool.
Yes.
And I love that. That's like, okay, what's an herbalist fantasy? It's like, well, an herbalist fantasizes about.
Exactly. Yeah. And living outside. I fantasize about living outside.
You know, I feel you on that. And when the weather's nice around here, before people's air conditioners start whirring and before the lawnmowers and every, you know, there's a short window of time before everything gets crazy. I like to sleep outside, and it just, even in my backyard here in the suburbs, but it feels so good. It's like you don't have to travel out into the wilderness, even though that's a wonderful medicine, but right where you do you ever go camping in your yard or outside?
I have not. I have a really huge population of deer and raccoons and possums in my yard that I see fairly frequently. And I wonder what they would do if I were out there.
Oh yeah.
It's not something. And also, this is probably too much information, but my dog sleeps with me, and my dog is very hyper. He's part hound dog. So he would bark all night long.
Oh my gosh.
And he would never tolerate me being outside sleeping if he were inside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He'd just spend all night like trying
to
get
freak out.
He would totally freak out, but it is something to aspire to for me, for sure.
I wonder how this fantasy will unfold. Stay.
I know.
Yeah. Whenever it comes into your reality, let me know. I want to hear about it.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So you mentioned you have two boys who are grown. Are they twins?
Yes. I have twin 20-year-old boys and an 18-year-old daughter.
Okay. Cause I didn't realize you had twins. Actually, I knew you had children and they're older, but I didn't know you had twins. So something that a lot of moms reach out to me asking about, to have people on the show, to have people share about on the show, is about motherhood, because there's so much shadow around motherhood that people feel like, why don't I feel this way, or how do I not lose myself, how do I grow my business, or what, take care of myself as a mom. And so you're pretty experienced by now. Do you have an experience that you can share that kind of highlights how you have been through this and found your way to the other side?
I will say, when my guys were really little, I was, you know, having twins first, I had two miscarriages before I had the twins. And miscarriages are something that are also not really talked about. You know, it's, of course, I understand that something happened that this pregnancy was not meant to be. But the amount of mourning and sadness that you feel, even if you've only bonded with that idea for a very short period of time, is intense. Mm-hmm. And most people don't talk about it. It's just like, okay, like I tried to even talk about it with my mom. And she's like, well, you know, that's just what was meant to be. It's time to move on. It's like, well, wait a second.
Wow.
You know, my body's not ready. So the first time that I had a miscarriage, they pushed me to have a DNC, which I did.
What's
and
a
the
DNC?
Second time, it's a dilation and cutellage. It's where they expand your uterus and they literally scrape it out to get everything out. Yeah. And they do that because there's this fear that something will go wrong with the fetus and you'll get an infection.
Okay.
But if you know any natural childbirth or, you know, midwives, they will tell you that that is not a really likely thing. This is a kind of one of those holdover things from like the 40s and 50s, I think, you know, where women were not supposed to have any control over their bodies at all. It was all male dominated. But
wait,
now,
women are supposed to have control over their bodies?
I know. Is it not the craziest thing?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or yeah, to know how to take care of your body and your own medicine and how to work it. But we can get back to that,
right,
too.
Yeah.
Contraception, all those things, right? So, but then the second time I decided to miscarry naturally.
You just wait. You decided to miscarry naturally. Because you didn't decide, oh, I'm going to miscarry this baby. So did the miscarriage symptoms begin and you're like, I'm just going to let it go?
So what happened, we went to have the test, you know, the pregnancy test, and they did an ultrasound and the pregnancy wasn't viable. And they immediately wanted to schedule me for another DNC. And I said, I don't want to do that. And the nurse practitioners there at the office were like, that's fine, you know, you can totally do it, but we don't know how long it's going to take. And they kind of really want you to have the DNC, but I decided I was going to do it. We actually made, my then husband and I made a pact with each other that we weren't going to tell his family, because his brother would completely freak out and would tell me that I was going to have the bubonic plague or something. I mean, he really was just blowing everything out of proportion. So we just didn't tell them. And it was incredibly painful, and it took really a full almost 9 months for me to finish miscarrying completely. Wow. And then I had an ovarian cyst after that. So it was just like, you know, one thing after another. And now, you know, being more spiritually in tune and knowing the way your body works, you know, all of those issues that have to do with the womb and the ovaries are usually about nurturing. So obviously I had nurturing issues, and myself being nurtured and nurturing others. Like at this point I was teaching small children, and it was really hard to put on a happy face. And here are all these people that have all procreated with abandon. And what is my problem, you know, and trying to have a happy face and all those sorts of things. So that was a time for me of introspection and getting to know my body and getting to know its rhythms and learning to listen to it more. And I waited a longer period of time before I tried to get pregnant again. And then the next time I got pregnant with twins. And when I went into the office, I went by myself. My first marriage my husband was not very supportive. So because I'd had two miscarriages and he couldn't miss any more work, or I don't really remember the reason, but I went by myself, and they're doing the ultrasound, and the nurse and the doctor start giggling, and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, well, you're making up for lost time. You're having twins. And I was like, what? So they give you this whole thing about how it's going to go down, and you're probably going to be in a bed rest. I mean, just right away,
gosh.
They give you this whole thing. Oh yeah. And it's not going to be a normal pregnancy, and you're high risk, and they're throwing all this stuff at me. And I'm just sitting there. And all I can think of is, I remember thinking, well, it's going to be okay, because I have two carriers I already have two carriers. It's all going to be fine. And that's what I said to them. And they're like, okay, you need to go for home for a while, and then we'll talk about this.
Two
again.
Carriers meaning like baby carriers?
Like two little baby carriers. I was like, yeah, I got two. It'll be okay.
So
somebody gave them. It's going to be fine.
I got this under control.
I got it. I got two carriers.
I love it.
I'm good. Yeah. So, but it was, I mean, it was a very different pregnancy. I didn't get to choose anything. It was all planned out for me, everything that was going to happen. Because I said, I don't have a birth plan. And they were like, you don't get to have one.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. So I have these, you know, amazing babies. And they are, you know, everybody wants a baby. They're so beautiful. You can tell that they've just come from the other side. You know, you look in their eyes and they have all of the wisdom of the universe that they're starting to lose in their deal to come back here. But they are helpless beings that require all of your attention. And there is no way, even I thought, because I taught small children for 10 years, that this would be a walk in the park. But it is the hardest thing that I've ever done. And it's still the hardest thing, I have to tell you, that I do. Is setting boundaries and carving out place for myself, and then helping them be their individual selves. It is a journey that it helps you to grow, but it also breaks you almost daily.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the interest of being really open, I had worked with sexually abused and physically abused children, and I always wondered how people could, you know, you hear about shaken baby syndrome, and I always wondered how that happened. Like, who would do that? Who would do that to a baby? And I remember one night, because these guys, I mean, in the very beginning, they would nurse at least once an hour, wow, maybe every 2 hours. So I was getting almost no sleep. I nursed them at the same time, which getting two babies in that position, it's not a comfortable position, wow, for me. And I was just exhausted. And they had colic and they were crying. And I was walking around the room and bouncing them and trying everything. And they just would not stop crying. And I just had this moment, this absolute moment, where I really wanted to just throw them against the wall. I just wanted the crying to stop. I couldn't do anything. And my now ex-husband was in the room next door sleeping and never got up, never helped, never made a move. And I was so ashamed that I had this feeling like I'm a mom. I am supposed to have, you know, every movie, it's unconditional love, mm-hmm, right? You do whatever you have to do, and it's just what it is. But there's a breaking point. And what I really think for most people, you have to have people around you that you can share those dark moments with and those dark feelings, and that you can call them at a time and say, I need some help right now. Mm. Because this is something that I have no control over, and my judgment is gone. I mean, after you have a baby, you've lost estrogen, your memory is shot. You're exhausted. You're literally, when they would breastfeed, while it is a pleasurable feeling, it really does feel like people are sucking the life out of you, because they are. Mm. You know, mm-hmm, it's like, I am literally giving you life. And that for me was really hard. And I couldn't talk to anyone about it. I actually called my dad,
wow,
surprisingly, wow, enough, the next day. And I told him, just weeping. And he said, yeah, he said, it's a really hard thing. You know, and he said, I don't condone it, but I certainly understand how people get to that breaking point, especially if you have no resources and no support. You know, what are you going to do?
And sick little baby twins. Wow.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, there's you just have to do. And if, yeah, having support is the most important thing, I think. And I had none. My family is in Pennsylvania and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So nobody close by.
So I think that is worthy of repeating, is find and use your support systems. Make,
yes,
if you don't have support systems, find them, call them in.
Yes. Yes.
Whatever it takes.
Totally.
Get them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that, you know, I really think that the earthy pagan witchy community is a good place for that, because it feels like people are more grounded and willing to be real. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But in my experience, you know, like, you're not going to find that a lot of times at your child's preschool or childcare program, because everybody there is worried, just as worried as you are, about how they appear in public and how they appear to teachers and how they appear to everyone. Mm-hmm. It's really better to have like family members or somebody outside that circle that you can be really real with, mm-hmm, and you don't have to worry that they're going to, you know, your worlds are going to collide and they're going to tell someone or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not a mom, but I see on Instagram some amazing moms sharing real talk,
yes,
about,
yes,
the highs and the lows and the, mm-hmm, and I think that is interesting for the conscious and witchy earthy communities, that I feel like there are more resources and more sharing and even more awareness around approaches that allow people to cope, you know, nutritionally, mentally,
yes,
physically, spiritually, emotionally, and to, you know, because you were having these kids in the 90s when this movement, you know, we didn't have smartphones and social media and all this information coming to the surface. It was more of, it was almost like a dark age still, you know, not like,
yes,
you know, it was different. It wasn't as connected in this way unless you were physically connected with people. And so now it's like, okay, go find your people wherever they are and allow them to help you figure out how to connect with what works for you, or just to get it out, you know, like, yeah, different day and age and a different, I mean, I'm obviously, I feel like I have to make this disclaimer, like, I'm not a mom, so I don't know what it's like, but just from observing from the non-mom side, it seems like social media can be a support system for that, so.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, there are all kinds of mom groups out there, and that can feel kind of safe, too, because they're not people that you're going to see or you feel are going to judge you in other ways, you know,
right.
And in some ways it's hard because it's like a surface knowing,
right,
in
right.
a way, but in another way, in times of crisis, you also have many more resources. There are so many more people that you can pull from their experiences in those chat groups, mm-hmm. or in those Facebook groups, that you get a lot more information.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And you know, I have so many friends, even my husband, I met him on the internet. It's like, okay, these are all real people you're interacting with.
That's true.
And you can
yes.
take it to another level where you talk on the phone or you meet each other.
Right.
I've met my internet friends in person and we're friends. It's like amazing. You know,
That's so cool.
You can make it real. It doesn't have to be
that.
So that's another level. I know as a mom, you're probably like tired and worn out, and there's like, it's like, okay, then just not yet. But you know,
someday.
At some point, you know, that's a possibility for people.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I hope that was helpful to some of the moms who have just been like, what am I doing?
Yeah. When you can, definitely recharge yourself. Self-care is really important, and it sounds lame, but honestly, sitting outside, like, I would take my kids, even when they were really little, outside, because the outside has always been a place that just nurtures me. Just sitting on the ground on a blanket with them, even when they were just babies and they could only lie there, as long as I was on the ground, I was doing so much better.
So simple. Just that calm sitting, touching the earth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm curious. You haven't mentioned it, whether you've had a formal herbalism training, or is that over the years you took courses and classes or read books or just learned? Like, how did you, what's your foundation in herbalism?
So I've done Rosemary Gladstar's Science and the Art of Herbalism online course.
Cool.
And it was sort of my basis. I totally love her. I also really adore Juliette de Berclay Levy, who is sort of Rosemary's mentor, who was in France and they brought her over, but just an amazing herbalist who was also incredible with animals. So the tie-in for me is really good because I have one of those crazy weird animals that's allergic to everything, and you know, they just wanted to put him on steroids for the rest of his life, and I'm always like, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So herbalism came into play there a lot. I tend not to follow any one person really strictly, because everybody has their own biases, and so I take things from all over. I am an equal opportunity learner. One of my very favorite herbalists, I must say, is Matthew Wood. He is a Minnesotan. And the other thing that I have that connection to my home, but also he also is a homeopath, and he understands and knows the power of plants. I feel like still we tend to try and use plants like we do medications, and more has to be better. And Matthew, in addition to homeopathy, which is all about microdosing, does the same thing with herbs. And he also does tongue and pulse diagnosis. And in pulse diagnosis, he'll take a tincture and put a drop of it on someone's wrist and feel their pulse change if their body needs it and the response, and know that that's what they need. And to me, that power and that knowledge is so sophisticated, and being able to read that and know it, I admire it so much, and it's something I aspire to knowing as well.
So have you trained in that, or do you do that?
I'm working on it. It's really weird getting to learn pulses and to feel them and how often they change. Because, you know, you really think that, oh, my pulse just goes to that, to that, to that. But no, it's so much more sophisticated than that. And there are so many ways to do it. But I do. I want to take a training with him actually in that. But because right now I'm just trying to do it on my own. And I'm usually really good at doing things on my own. But this is one where I'd like, you know, direction.
Yeah, sounds like that would be helpful. And whenever you need guinea pigs, I'm willing.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm supposed to go around just feeling people's pulses all the time.
You can feel my pulse.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you, sister.
Yeah. So that's cool. So you've had this sort of, I feel like a lot of herbalists have this eclectic training, because it's not this one and done type thing. Like, you go to university and now you're a doctor. It's like, actually, you have relationships with plants, and you have learn about these beings and how to work with them. So what is your relationship with the plants like? Like, what draws you to them, and how do you hear them, essentially? How do you interact with them?
So I have gardens at my house, but they're not big enough that they could supply what I need at the store, which is sad to me, but it's also really cool that I go through so many things. So it's a balance. At some point I would like to have a larger piece of land where I can do that sort of thing and do it more, but right now it's just what it is. But I love to go out and just sit with my plants, or like, I have some plants that I really love and I would love to eat, but I like leave them for caterpillars or, you know, and that's their role at my house, to just be a pollinator and to just be a beautiful thing or whatever. And then I have medicinal plants that I use strictly for medicine. And then I keep very carefully for that. Like, I believe in weeds. I like weeds. I really don't believe in grass. I think it's a waste of water. So even in my garden beds, I have creeping Charlie everywhere, also known as ground ivy, which is amazing for if you've got tinnitus, which is, you know, the constant ringing in your ears. It's great for that. It's also a good green that you can just eat. But I literally let it take over for a while, and then I will weed it out as I need it, as I need to make space, as the yarrow keeps growing or whatever, you know. But they all talk to me, and they're all like, leave us. We need to be here. We're good too. So I do. My spiritual practice with plants is about meditating with them. And when I'm working with people and making custom things for them, I realized that I have to write down what I make for people as they talk to me, because I won't remember it later. And at first I was really worried about it. Like, I'll have these intense conversations with people and I won't really remember any of it. And then I realize I'm just channeling whatever they're supposed to hear and that I can't keep track of all of it. It would be too hard and it would bring me down, because I would get too involved in their story, or maybe my ego would also get too involved.
Right. You'd get kind of sucked into the vortex.
Exactly. So this way it just keeps the channel really clean. I just, you know, I ask for guidance and wisdom when I deal with anyone, and that I am just there to help them get what they need, and then it just flows.
You seem to just channel, you hear, you listen to the people's words, but what you're really hearing is what would help them reconnect with their wholeness and come back into health, rather than sitting there getting stuck in the story of this happened. Yes. And maybe while you're hearing those words, you're also hearing, you know, you have all this knowledge, but it sounds like you're letting this intuitive side just say, oh, this plant's really good for helping with that. Do you ever, I mean, it probably aligns up with like, oh, you're having, you know, you have tinnitus, so this ground ivy would be really helpful. Does that seem to happen, or is it, do you know, I mean, have you noticed that or paid attention to how that kind of aligns with your teaching? I'm just curious, like, how it channels through.
Yeah. So sometimes, sometimes they'll say something and I just know the answer. But a lot of times people come to me for emotional things, and that is really personal. So some, I might ask them a couple questions. Some people are really, they really believe that medicine should taste good. I don't know where this idea comes from. But so I will ask a question, because to me, no herb is really offensive in flavor to me. And when I make a blend, I really like people to have infusions to drink, medicinal, you know, strength, meaning you're going to let it, you're going to steep it for at least 20 minutes covered to keep all the volatile oils in there. But I like the ritual. I think that taking a capsule and taking a tincture is, it's not thoughtful enough. And we are learning how powerful our minds are for our own healing. And I think having a conscious ritual of making yourself something, and I tell people what the ingredients that I put in there will do for them, and then sitting down with that and heating the water and steeping the tea, and then sitting down and actually consciously drinking and knowing that you are doing something for yourself to help yourself heal. If you're having anxiety or you have grief or whatever your issue is, that you are making a conscious effort along with the plants and along with their spiritual qualities and their healing properties to help heal. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
Love it. And that's what you're helping them do, is create that space that, yes, part of the problem is we think that we should be able to exist without that space, that we should be all right.
Yes.
And that's part of what's so funny about it, is like, actually,
yes,
that's part of the solution, y'all.
It is. Yes. Yeah. And it's the whole food is thy medicine thing is so true. And people still, I mean, this is the hardest thing for me, is that people come in and they're like, I want something for inflammation. And I'm like, okay. And then, so I was like, may I ask you a few, you know, lifestyle questions? And then I ask about diet, and it's like they want something. They don't want to give up eating a lot of sugar or the things that may be causing the inflammation, but they want to take an herb. And I'm like, oh, it's not going to work. I just want to tell you, I could make a sale here, but I just want to tell you, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It's a bigger picture, you know, it's so big. And it's all, I mean, some of it is, you know, some of it's emotional. I carried weight around for sure on my body as an insulation, because I was scared of being seen and being myself. And I used it as a buffer. So we're such complicated beings.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but there could be like the ritual of working with an herb and the knowledge and wisdom that that herb can impart,
yes,
into your consciousness and into your system and into your body and into your cells can help you move through whatever's at the root of that need for,
yes,
protection on all levels, on the emotional, physical, spiritual, mental levels.
Yes. Yes. It takes that, but it takes an openness.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be that willingness. If you're not willing to make a change, then nothing's going to happen.
And that's when you get the tower card.
That is when you get the tower card, which, yes, funny you should mention that tower card, because that is life.
That is life.
Right now,
life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So funny.
But it's good. I mean, and that's the thing. But even in these health crises, like people who experience a health crisis many times will say that that crisis was really important. And even though they wouldn't want to maybe go through it again because of how hard it was, the benefit that they received from it in some other way somehow made it worthwhile.
Right, right. And that's healing right there. Like that's healing. When you can, because that feeling of like that, it comes into that feeling of gratitude and love and completion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Wow. So I want to know some more about your, because we have sat in ritual space together and done magic,
yes,
together, and it was delightful.
Yes.
And
thank you. Yes, it
and
was.
I want to know about some of your witchy practices, and when did you start getting into Were you like a kid that knew, oh, I'm witchy, and you just didn't know what that meant or how to do it? Or did you come to it later in life? Like, what was that realization like for you?
Oh my God, that was another dark night of the soul. I was raised evangelical fundamentalist.
Wow.
So, yeah. So the Bible is the literal word of God. The earth was created in 7 literal days, the whole nine yards. I always was outside and I always loved nature. I was dyeing yarn with pokeberries when I was like,
oh my
four,
God, I love
you know,
it.
Out in the woods. Yeah. I had, and you know, my mom had no fear that I was going to eat poison, you know, that I was going to get poisoned. She's like, just don't eat them. And I'm like, okay.
Nice.
You know, and I was always taking bugs and praying mantises and stuff to school and baby snakes for show and tell. And I lived my grandfather's had a farm when he was growing up and they sold it to an Amish family, but he kept 3 plots of land for his children. So my dad had a spot and then my cousins that didn't live there had a plot. And then I had other cousins that actually lived. So we had trails through the woods and we hung out in the woods and my 2 girl cousins and I for years, like whenever school was over, we built teepees out of sticks in the woods that had like, there were tunnels in between them and we would make fern beds and it was just what we did. And I loved it. It was the best thing ever.
Wow. Was that in Pennsylvania or Minnesota?
Yeah, that was in Pennsylvania. And then we moved to northern Minnesota to, 80 acres when I was 10 and there, I was more scared of the woods there because there were timber wolves there and there are bear and there are moose and no snakes. I never saw a snake in all my time.
Wow.
There, which is so sad. I would have loved that. But like the bigger animals definitely made me more nervous. I just wasn't used to that idea. So I hung out pretty close to my house. I still played in the woods. We had a creek down behind our house that I played in, but I didn't go far. Like I could.
Right. Like all your trails. I mean, you had like family land and trails that perhaps your ancestors walked. I don't know.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in Pennsylvania. So different type of place. I mean, different ecosystem, different land, everything. But it's interesting to see how a 10-year-old you went from one experience of connecting with nature to a totally different one and that you are so aware of that.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, I didn't. And then, you know, in high school, who I guess other people maybe hike and that sort of thing. Our family went for hikes, but it wasn't like I hung out outside a lot. I was busy, you know, in all my teenage angst.
Right.
And I actually went to 2 Christian colleges.
Wow.
And one for theology, which is not really approved of for women in that faith. So you can imagine how well that went over. And after I came to North Carolina to be with a friend of mine, my best friend from high school, who was in Durham at Duke, and I never left. And when I was here, I started working with more of a hippie crowd. And I'd left my faith behind. I had sort of this crisis of faith while I was in college. And it just didn't make sense to me anymore. Like that the Bible should be taken literally and that all these people were going to hell. And that for some reason I was not going to be one of those people, even though I'd done a lot of the same shit. But I just couldn't do it. So I decided that I wasn't going to pray or anything. And I was going to see what happened. Like, would my life be drastically different? And it wasn't. And I experimented with paganism some in the early 90s, but I didn't really have a group of people. And my boyfriend, who then became my husband at the time, was Irish Catholic. So he was like, I don't know what you're doing. And I don't want to be involved in it. you do whatever you do, but you may be going to hell and I'm not going with you. So I was sort of this solo practitioner just trying to figure it out. But I'd always been interested in spiritual things. And I started, after my divorce, I started reading Sacred Contracts by Carolyn Mace and studying Tibetan Buddhism, which for some reason I felt really connected to. And I really don't know why. I have guesses now that maybe there's some past life connection, but at the time it didn't really make sense to me. It's still a fairly male dominated sort of religion, which maybe that is part of what was comforting to me too, whereas like paganism, goddess worship, that felt like maybe blasphemy to me.
Too far
like,
out.
What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just too far out. So this was a way that was a little bit easier. And then about 4 years ago, I started meditating mostly because of this vitalistic healing class that I was taking, because my teacher's view also with homeopathy is, so when you take someone's case in homeopathy, you listen to their entire medical life history for an hour and a half to 2 hours, and you take notes in their words. You're just taking all that information in. And then you have to synthesize that information to find a remedy. And you need to find a remedy for someone. You're looking for 5 or 6 really distinguishing features about their case history that would set them apart from everyone else. And it's complex and difficult, and it's science and intuition together. And she really feels that you can't really be a good homeopath unless you know how to still your mind and just listen and wait for that and to get to know your intuition. Mm-hmm. So that part of the requirement of the course is that we had to meditate 60 hours, I want to say, which doesn't sound like very much in a year, but when you really sit down to do it, it feels like it can be a really long time.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. But that became the basis. Meditating totally changed my life. And I now understand that still small voice within and getting to it and how to get to it. So daily meditation is a really big deal for me. And I practice, you know, focus meditation also just to hone my witchy skills. Because intention and focus are a very big part of magic. I will do, cleansing energy, you know, where I'm breathing in white smoke and breathing out black smoke to try and cleanse my energy field in my body. And then I will also focus on a flame that is inside of me and that I can see it, you know, moving around depending on what's going on, but that flame doesn't go out and that I'm keeping it lit and I'm keeping my focus on
it. You're nurturing it.
Yes. Yeah. So I would say that's the biggest thing I do is meditate.
Yeah, I love that. And gosh, I feel like meditation is a gateway drug for so many people into witchiness and spirituality, and just because it really does help open your awareness to the whole other side of you that was just kind of hanging out waiting for a chance to be seen.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's amazing because in that really quiet place, these answers come from and you're like, where the hell did that come from?
Right?
Like my conscious mind has been stewing over this for months and then whoop, there it is. But then, you know, that's the other big thing is like, am I going to trust that voice? Is that the crazy voice or is that really it? You know, like,
right. And that's a whole journey of how do you learn to trust the intuition. Is it intuition or is it fear? Or is people want to know, is it intuition or your imagination? What's the difference? Is there a difference?
Right.
Those are a lot of big questions people like to have. But do you have a sort of what does your intuition say about that in answer to those sorts of questions?
That your imagination is definitely your friend, and it is in many cases it's just as real as what you perceive outside of you.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a test or a filter or a way of knowing whether you're coming from intuition or from fear?
I can usually tell by where it sits in my body. Fear for me is always driven by anxiety, and I can turn it on really easily, and it's down lower in my abdomen around my sacral chakra is where I will feel it. And I feel my intuition more in my solar plexus. It's a little bit higher up, and it just, And if I feel calm there, then I know that that's what it is. When I was first learning to trust that, I would use a pendulum or, you know, my body is a pendulum to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And I guess one thing I want to add to that, just because that's a question so many people have so often, is that if it feels contracting and tight and like shutting down, you're probably coming from fear. And if it feels expansive, even if it feels a little scary, but it has that expansive feeling, then that's a sign it's from intuition. It's like, okay, because that intuition and expansive feeling can be terrifying, but you can feel the expansiveness of it versus that shut down, like,
I'm not going to think, I don't want to think of this. Right. Is, you know, so I recently have had to make a decision that I knew was the right decision in my, the very soul of my being, but I knew it was going to be really hard to do. And to trust that and do it afterward, I still felt the pain of the situation, but my inner heart was still so at peace, even though it was awful and hard, and it's still going to be awful and hard for a little bit, but my heart knows that it's the right thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. And to be able to trust that. And I mean, I often don't tell people how old I am, because I feel like age is a way to relate to people and people decide whether or not they're going to be condescending to you based on your age. But at this point in my life, you know, it's taken me 49 years to listen to my body and to know what it wants. And I wish that I had known it earlier, and I wish that I had trusted it earlier. And you can always practice on little things and work up to the big things.
Oh, bam. Words of wisdom right there. That's like, everyone rewind and re-listen to that. Wow. Beautiful. So something I know that you do and like doing and want to do more of is leading rituals. And I've really enjoyed being in ritual space with you, and I want to hear about what called you to that? What called you to participating or creating rituals for yourself and then sharing them? Like what brewed in you that brought this out?
So I really think that part of it is, so when I was in Bible, you know, when I was in Christian college and studying theology, I've always felt a calling and led by Spirit to teach and lead. But obviously it wasn't supposed to happen in that denomination. And I just had to figure it out, and it took me a little
while. Thank goddess.
So exactly. Right. So what I really love, I love leading moon rituals. I like leading past life regressions. I love watching people crack open in their spirituality and have those aha moments that they really can connect with Spirit on their own, and they don't need an outside guide, but they sometimes need some guidance knowing what that feels like and what that looks like.
They don't need an outside authority.
Exactly. Thank you. That is the perfect word. Yeah. No authority. You have everything that you need, but just that guidance of what might that look like, or how do I do this, and what do I feel, and how do I know, like you said, is it my imagination? Is it the real thing? And I think a really nice way to learn that and feel that is that when we get together in a group and have a sacred space, you can feel the power. I mean, even if you're doing, I was in a guided meditation ritual that someone else led, and it was a breathing ritual, and just everyone breathing in sync. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's such an amazing feeling and sound. Mm. And so those sorts of things, and watching people have intentions and writing things down, and then later they come back and they're like, oh my God, you won't believe what happened after we did that ritual.
You're like, maybe I will believe it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, go ahead. The people say, I have something really weird to tell you, and I'm not sure how you feel. I'm like, oh. Trust me, just try me. I can't wait. Let's do it, you know?
I love that.
I love that kind of. Yeah, it's fabulous. So I look forward to leading more rituals. Like, I also teach classes on herbalism, but the ritual leading is fun in a different way. Like, I love turning people onto plants, and I love seeing how excited people get. And when they realize that learning about plants is really pretty accessible, and everybody can do it. It's plant experience. And the same thing is true with your spirituality and your spirit guides. You just need to practice and experience them. Mm-hmm. And doing it in a safe group is so much fun.
Right. And the difference between teaching versus ritual space, while you can have a ritual space that you're teaching in, teaching tends to be more mental, critical mind versus going into your body and connecting into the larger parts of you than just your mind.
Exactly.
Which feels really good, and which we don't do enough of in our society, and which is like, that's everything. Like,
it's everything. It's everything. I mean, one of my very favorite things to do is just to sit in quiet meditation with people. Because sometimes I can feel the energy of that and that pulsing, and it feels amazing. And I feel like everybody's focus is intensified because of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've sat in circle. It's a closed shamanic healing circle for a couple years, and then it closed, and then it opened again in a new formation we're in a year and a half now. And the space, like, being in the space with others in a safe way, in a guided way, in an open, trusting, held way is so valuable. And again, kind of linking back to what you said about, you know, your advice for mothers and finding support, I would say anyone listening, any intuitives or healers or seekers who don't have something like this in their life, to start testing out environments and places and groups where you might be able to find that space and get that experience, because that'll boost your confidence and your intuition. It'll help you get really clear on knowing your inner guidance and your pathways, and on sharing it and making it real. Like, it makes it real.
It does. And there are, you know, there's something about being in a big group, but also when you're in those groups, it's interesting how when I've started to go to any circle or gathering now, it feels like I know everybody there already. I used to be really scared, and I'm like, oh, I've been with these people before. I just, you know, I know them. And out of those larger groups come smaller groups, and I now have like a power posse. I have women that I can call on, and I know, and we have ritual, and they are powerful rituals. And we all have these amazing experiences together when we do them. And it is so life affirming and validating, and they happen to all be mothers, but there's also that connection too. Like, our children are all different ages, but we can all relate to each other in that way too. And a lot of times that outgrowth is another really important source for women to have. That a spiritual social hookup is incredible.
And it's so different. It's such a contrast from the catty competition to the let's be sisters in support,
hold each other up,
and like see each other and allow ourselves to be seen in our all of our aspects.
Yes, it's so much fun. I mean, and it's so much fun, like, to have people that you know, and you've just gotten, like, I cannot do tarot readings for myself because I just am not objective enough, right? So I keep pulling these cards, and I'm writing them down, and I'm telling myself this story about the cards. And so I call one of my power posse women, and I send her a picture of my spread. And she's like, okay, you're thinking that this person is like your anchor to the ground. Did you ever think maybe they're a tether? Like, I'm like, oh, like, I thought they were keeping me grounded. No. They're restricting my flight.
Wow.
You know? So that outside and a trusted outside source, especially even with a woo-woo, is really fun. I have to say, it's just one of the best things.
I love that. Cool.
Yes.
So what is, you have your shop at Everyday Magic, and anyone who's ever visiting or lives in or comes near Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, come over to Durham, go check out Everyday Magic. Yes. They're closed on Mondays, so don't go on Monday, but any other day, go check them out. Rochelle might or might not be there, but you can still go check out her herbs and talk with the lovely witches that run the shop and enjoy. It's like that, stepping into that space, you're like, do I have to leave? It's incredible.
I know. It is so amazing. Yeah. And there's a hammock chair that it's really hard to get out of, and you're welcome to sit there.
I love the hammock chair.
And Yes. And I'll bring you some tea, and it's fabulous.
It is fabulous. Yeah. And actually, for listeners, I think it was episode 11. I'll have to double check that. But Lizzie and I interviewed Bacaro back when she first opened the shop. And so
awesome.
Y'all can check out that link and connection and just dive deep into Durham witch world.
Yes. So much fun over here.
Yeah. And so what do you sell? You sell things online. So if someone wants to check out a spagyric offering or some of your incense or something, and they live in, say, Japan or California or Minnesota, they can still connect with you. How do you recommend they best do that?
You can check out empressherbs.com, and it doesn't have everything on there. And it's been really interesting now that I have things in store, in an actual storefront. Keeping up with everything as one person is really interesting, and it's a skill I'm learning to be more organized about. On the shopeverydaymagic.com website, you will also find some of my bulk herbs, and there are some tea blends, and the incenses are there. But empressherbs.com has just my things on there, and there's also a contact button. I do custom orders and custom blends, and people schedule consults with me if they can't be here in person, and we talk about things, and then I can come up with a blend or something as well.
And are you open to consulting with people about personal rituals they might be able to create?
Yes. Oh, totally. That is so much fun. Yes.
Cool. And let's see, you're on Instagram, Empress of Herbs, and are you on Facebook? I think you're on Facebook.
I am on Facebook too. There's an Empress Herb page, and then you can also find me under Rochelle Eisenberger.
Okay, so there's a ton of ways people can connect with you, and also my favorite, just show up in the shop and connect. And I'll have all the links to Rochelle's links and to Everyday Magic and to the episode with Bacaro, which I've checked. It is episode 11. So. Nice. I'm relieved that my memory works.
Yeah, that's a great episode.
Thanks. Yeah, her story is so intense and amazing. I love it.
Yes, I do too.
And I love her. She's so cute and funny and just badass. It's like, thanks,
yes,
girl.
I know. She is such an inspiration to me. I consider her my mentor. Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
She's a great inspiration. Yeah. Hi, Bacaro.
Yeah.
Hi, Madison. Thank you for all you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
I know.
Love you. Awesome. So I'm like, oh, can we just keep talking all day? But we all have things to do. And it's kind of funny how you're in your business, you're at a point where it's like, yeah, it would be okay. I would love to take on another person, but it's like that tipping point. So it'll be fun to watch as it does grow and change and morph into its true essence what it looks like. So everyone stay tuned and follow the journey.
Yes. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
It was so fun.
Yeah, this was so fun. And so everyone, make sure to tune into the secret episode. We have no idea what we'll talk about yet, but I'm sure it will be juicy. So they always are. And you can go to dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret to get the secret episodes, y'all. And thank you, Rochelle. And to our listeners, have an amazing day and week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. You can check out the secret episodes at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. And if you are one of the people who heard the recording with Liv Wheeler, where we spoke with the Kintumbla about doing a full moon ancestralization ritual around the fire, and if you did that, we would love to hear about your experience and potentially even have you on the show to share about that. So especially if you were in a country that is not the United States, we'd love to incorporate some more international perspectives and viewpoints into what's going on, into the show, into sharing here. And so if you have done this ritual and you'd like to share your experience, then get in touch with me at dreamfreedombeauty.com. Go to the contact page and just shoot me a little note and say, hey, we did it. Here was our experience. Da 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 da. And if you want to come on the show to share, say that. And if we get enough of you together, maybe we'll have a cool episode with a bunch of different perspectives on what happened in your rituals. Okay, folks, I hope y'all have an excellent week. And until then, make sure you go say hi to a tree. Tell the flowers how good they look. Smell that air. Smell how good this air smells. And say hello to the earth. Make sure you say hello to all your living beings around you, supporting you, and bringing you beauty in your daily life. All right, bye.